Welcome to Your Many Facets, episode 54 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Alwigon. Today's episode may feel a bit like a walkabout as you hear the thoughts I will share, yet I invite and encourage you to journey with me on this little adventure of the mind. I hope and believe that by the end of this episode, you will have new insights into yourself and others, and some new tools that will help you to more mindfully choose how you want to relate to others in any given situation. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Kobo Abe. No matter how many faces I have, there is no changing the fact that I am me. Back in the mid-1980s, when I was studying psychology in college, I observed something about the human psyche, which I call the multifaceted sphere. I came to understand through my studies in the classroom and my observation of myself and others that we all have many different personalities residing within us, some of which are common to all of us, others which are unique to an individual formed by our innate characteristics and life circumstance. Any of these personalities may come to the forefront without our consciously being aware of it, evoked by the situation we're in and our emotional response to that situation. Sometimes more than one personality can be present at the same time. Think about it. When you're with a parent or even a parental figure, the child in you will be evoked, and you're likely to interact with them from your child self, whether it's to look up to them, give your power to them, or to have a childish response when they upset you. The child in us is also sometimes evoked in the presence of an authority figure. I notice that when people get stopped by a law enforcement officer, they often revert to rebellious child when the officer tells them they have misbehaved in some way. This can trigger the punitive parent in the officer. When you're with your children, if you're playing with them, your child personality may be present, but it is your parent personality that is the one who is likely at the forefront, watching for danger, teaching the rules of play, being mindful of the time and other responsibilities, etc. If you're with your children but not playing with them, then the child in you is in the background, and the parent in you even more in the forefront, and perhaps your inner leader or teacher shows up as well. If something or someone threatens your child, if you have an inner warrior, which some people don't, your warrior will take over to vanquish the threat. If you're with your romantic partner, the lover in you may be at the forefront, acting in romantic, intimate ways. Lover isn't present when we're with our parents or children or in most other situations. Lover is evoked in romantic situations. At work, you may be functioning from your inner leader, your inner follower, teacher, warrior, child, some other personality, or any combination thereof, depending on many different variables. Are you starting to get the picture here? There are many other possible personalities within you, besides parent, child, teacher, leader, and warrior. Other examples are wise person, healer, instigator, diplomat, builder, destroyer, and many others. Each can be functional in some situations and dysfunctional in others. Being in your lover self while at work is an example of a dysfunctional presence, unless, of course, your profession is a sexual line of work. I believe that these multiple personalities inside of us are a big part of what contributes to having mixed feelings. One personality feels one way, and another personality feels something completely different. Makes perfect sense. I encourage you to neutrally observe yourself and explore within. Seek to identify who the many people inside you are, what evokes them, how they respond to different situations, and how functional those responses are. Really give it some thought. There's no right or wrong here. Each personality has developed in response to certain life experiences or roles that you've had to take, whether you chose them or not. Doing this kind of self-observation and exploration will help you to mindfully bring forth the personality or personalities most appropriate for any given situation and consciously respond to the moment. Perhaps you're the kind of person whose warrior gets activated in the presence of someone who's trying to exert authority over you. Well, if that someone is your captor who wants to lock you away and force you into a situation where you'll be harmed, then your warrior may be just the right personality to bring forth to defend yourself. On the other hand, depending on the situation and the traits of your captor, it may be better to try using your diplomat first and see if there's a way to negotiate your release, or your healer or wise person to try to connect with the wounded person inside your captor and change the way they relate to you so that they no longer want to harm you. Evoking these personalities to gain your release before bringing forth your warrior may prevent a more violent situation. If, however, the person trying to exert authority over you is someone to whom the law has given that right, your warrior will not serve you well. Your diplomat or wise person will serve you far better. The more you get to know the different personalities inside you, the better able you will be to mindfully choose who you want to bring forth in response to any given situation, and the more adept you'll become at choosing how that personality will act and react in that situation. I see each of us with all our personalities as a multifaceted sphere. Picture one of those crystal balls with all the facets in them that people sometimes use as sun catchers. That's how I see us. The facets are all our different personalities through which the light of our soul shines out to others. We can consciously control which facets we turn toward the person in front of us and how our soul will shine its light through that facet. Here's an example. You may recall that in previous episodes, I talked about how I was a very angry teenager. I have a mighty warrior inside of me. That warrior was raging against things that happened to me that I felt were unjust and in some cases extremely hurtful. Since what had happened couldn't be undone, and my other personalities felt unable to bring about any justice for myself, my warrior was in a constant state of anger and hypervigilance. Much of that anger was unjustly directed to those closest to me, who had never done me any harm. That happened because my warrior was in the forefront and out of control, so much so that I didn't even recognize that I was hurting the people I loved. My warrior can be very nearsighted. That went on until I was about 16 or 17, and my mother sat me down one day and spoke to me in a calm and imploring way that evoked the healer and wise woman in me as she helped me to see that I was hurting people dear to me. Of course, at that time, I hadn't yet come to the awareness and understandings I'm sharing with you today, but I did recognize that I needed to do something else with my anger, because it wasn't in my nature to want to hurt anyone, especially those I loved. As my self-awareness grew over the years, and especially after I began to work with my theory of the multifaceted sphere that I see us to be, I became familiar with my various personalities, what evoked or triggered them, and how to mindfully bring to the forefront those facets who will best serve in any given situation. Now, when I'm angry, I consciously put my inner warrior in the background because she can be thoughtless, intimidating, and unnecessarily hurtful sometimes. I assure her that I'll call her forth if I need her, but she is not to come forward unless I call her. I bring forth the diplomat, the wise woman, perhaps the teacher, and sometimes even the healer, because the healer in me is better able to perceive when people are acting from their wounded places, which helps me approach the situation more compassionately. When I have a public speaking engagement or will be facilitating a large public meeting, or even when getting ready to teach a class, the child in me sometimes becomes afraid, and I feel resistance to standing up in front of all those people and doing my work. I know that if I bring my inner child to the event, she'll come through and I'll be nervous, anxious, and not as effective. I know this may sound a bit off the wall to you, and yes, I acknowledge that it's a somewhat unusual approach, but it works very well for me and has worked well for those whom I've coached in this practice. There's so many ways in which these understandings of yourself and these practices can be usefully applied. And here's another interesting thing about this. You remember a bit earlier when I said that we respond to law enforcement from our rebellious child that can trigger the punitive parent in the officer? It's important to recognize that the personality you bring forth in a situation will evoke one or more of the personalities in the other people involved. Be mindful of that. You can utilize that awareness in your interpersonal interactions. Know that if you bring forth your inner warrior, you will likely evoke the warrior or the victim in the other person. And that phenomenon that I talked about in previous episodes of this podcast, where people unconsciously mirror each other's behavior, may well come into play here too, which is why your warrior may evoke their warrior to come forth ready for combat. Do you recognize how this also ties into setting the tone, which I talked about in episode 19? Which personality you bring into a situation will contribute to the tone that is set. One of my listeners, who I know personally, contacted me last week to ask for advice on how to deal with a difficult situation with the dentist whom she had entrusted to do thousands of dollars worth of dental reconstruction work. I'll call her Linda. Linda is originally from New York and communicates in what I call the New York style of communication, very direct, to the point, and rather edgy, sometimes coming across as aggressive and non-negotiable when she's upset with someone. She is a wise and compassionate healer and nurturer for those who need her, yet a formidable adversary toward those who go against what she believes is right. With all that, she also has times of vulnerability and fear, as we all do. But it's hard to see that in the presence of her strong, direct way of presenting herself. Linda had not worked with this dentist prior to coming to him when a bridge in her mouth began to fall apart from age. After he examined her, she learned that her mouth needed a lot more work than she previously knew, to the tune of $8,000, a staggering amount for most people, and certainly for Linda, who has lived her life focusing more on service than accumulation of wealth or any significant savings. The cost of this work will take every penny she has. As many of us might, Linda feels very vulnerable in this situation. She is essentially at the mercy of this dentist, his skills, and his judgment calls. Recently, after he'd done some work on her mouth, she noticed that her bite had changed and felt off to her. She let the dentist know right away. He dismissed her concerns, telling her that it was impossible that her bite was off. Understandably, this upset her. She began having headaches and became less able to chew her food well and, as you might imagine, became increasingly concerned and upset, both by what was happening in her mouth and by the dentist ignoring her distress. So Linda began to advocate for herself, calling his office frequently, getting more and more demanding for him to give her concerns some attention and treatment. Finally, she got an appointment, and in the process of trying to correct what was happening with her bite, he accidentally chipped one of her front teeth. And to top it all off, he also minimized the seriousness of what he had just done. He did say that he would correct the damage, but that it would have to wait until he was ready to do the rest of the bridge work, which would be 4 to 6 weeks down the road. Meanwhile, Linda's bite is still off, she still has daily headaches, and now has to try to work around a chipped front tooth, all of which bothers her constantly and is disrupting her sleep. Of course, Linda is becoming more and more frustrated and escalated in her upset. She decided she needed to confront him directly, to do whatever was necessary to get him to talk about this situation with her. She made the appointment for that conversation, then she called me for my advice about how to approach it. As I listened to her tell me what happened, it was clear to me that she felt very vulnerable, at the mercy of someone doing major work on her body, making mistakes which he wasn't owning up to, discounting her experience, and disregarding her feelings. Think that evoked her warrior? You bet it did. And she had been responding to that situation from her warrior self. That appeared to be evoking the rabbit in her dentist, because from her perspective, all it did was make him want to run and hide. She felt he had been avoiding her, which of course made her angrier. She also felt trapped in the situation, since she had already invested $1,500 down payment. If she went to another dentist, they'd have to start over, which would cost her more money and more time before it would be resolved. Along with her warrior, her child was activated, feeling vulnerable, helpless, and afraid. So the first thing that I suggested is that she begin doing some deep breathing exercises to help calm herself and get her mind clear as she assessed her options about how to approach him. Then I shared with her my observations about seeing that her warrior and her child were activated by this situation and that the warrior was the one responding. After considering what I said, she agreed. I told her I was concerned that her warrior would evoke his warrior if that hadn't happened already, and that I didn't think it would serve her well at all for that to happen. She agreed, but also said that she didn't want to approach this through her scared child and come off weak and needy. I suggested that she spend some time before they spoke, calling forth her teacher and wise woman to be the ones to talk to her dentist. I suggested that even though she might not want to speak from the scared child, the teacher could describe the feelings of vulnerability and fear to the dentist in a way that he could feel safe hearing, and perhaps that might evoke some empathy or at least some compassion. I also proposed that she speak more slowly and at a lower octave than her normal way of speaking because I felt that would help them both stay calm and help her get through to him better. I perceived that this approach would likely give them both a new experience of talking about this, something serving them both better than warrior to warrior or warrior to rabbit. I suggested her wise woman might be the personality to negotiate the positive outcome. These ideas resonated for her, and she decided to give them a try. She called me with an update right after she got off the phone with him. She said she kept her patience and kept her cool. She said that she knew that he heard her, and he promised he's going to make it right. She said that he got it, that she felt vulnerable, and in her words, it surely softened him. I encourage you, dear listener, to give this concept some thought. Neutrally observe yourself, your interactions, and your responses to situations. Who's inside of you? Who responds to the different situations that you experience? What responses in what contexts are you recognizing are constructive or destructive? Who inside of you is the best personality to bring forth in which situations? How can you prevent the personalities that don't serve a situation from being present? The answers to these questions may take some time to come to you. I encourage you to keep exploring this and practice mindfully utilizing the strengths of the different personalities inside of you to improve your interactions with others. You know, as I'm talking about this, I'm thinking back to episode 7 of this podcast when I talked about our different conflict styles. I hadn't really put this together before this moment, though now it seems rather obvious. I'm seeing a correlation between the 5 conflict styles, compete, avoid, accommodate, compromise, and collaborate, and how that might relate to which one of our personalities is responding in that moment. I think that mindfully choosing the most constructive style with which to approach a particular conflict will help bring forth the most constructive personality too, and vice versa. That feels like I just found some puzzle pieces that fit together. You'll find this practice useful in all kinds of situations in addition to when you're in conflict. Let me know if you try this and how it works for you. If you have feedback on how to refine this practice, I'd love to hear that too. The student in me wants to learn from your experience. If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. I look forward to hearing from you with your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.